So would you warmly welcome Edward Amaya.
Well, it is exciting to be here this morning, especially because we have such history together. And that's the encouragement. As I was praying this morning, I just wanted to remind us there's so many beautiful things going on at this church, and I've had hugs from almost every one of you so far, and the few I haven't, I'll get a hug from. But there's so much going on in this world that a lot of times it can feel like, is it really worth it? Are we making any progress? Why does this have to be so difficult? And what I can tell you this morning, and you're going to hear testimony after testimony, is that I found out in my life that the greatest things usually come where it's the most difficult of situations. Number one, I have to lean into the Lord so incredibly hard. But when the miracles do come, then I get to stand before the congregation and I get to, with complete boldness, tell you of mighty things that God continues to do, not just in my life, but across the globe. Just for a show of hands, was anybody here when Wes was here several years ago? Does anybody know Wes Bentley? Raise your hand. Or Far Reaching Ministries? Good. Then I'll start from the beginning. There's a few of you, and for the rest of you who know us, I think that you'll appreciate kind of a background. We are a Calvary Chapel ministry. We actually started this work about just 27 years ago. I was not involved in it. It was actually started by a man that was my first roommate at 19. He was my bigger brother. He, former Marine, just loved on me, just became this amazing person in my life. And I went towards business, at least that's what I thought that the Lord was calling me to. I was going to be an example in boardrooms, at least that's what I thought, and the Lord did allow that to happen. But Wes knew from a young Christian age that he was going to serve Jesus. He went from wanting to be a killer, he was so angry and so confused when he got into the Marines as a 16-year-old or 17-year-old, or he lied about his age and got into the Marines. But God so met him there and radically changed his life. He went from wanting to be a killer to a man that wants to save lives. He was serving as a missionary in Russia, and he got a call. He loves Russia. He loves the cold. He loves everything about it. It just fits his personality. And to kind of speed up the story a little bit, he got a call from some Calvary people, and they wanted to go into a place called South Sudan, because they had heard that there was a terrible civil war going on and that the Islamic North was coming down and they were decimating hundreds of thousands of people. And so the church wanted to figure out what could be the response of the American church. So Wes ends up going into South Sudan and didn't know it at all, didn't even know where it was on the map. He'd never been really that part of Africa. And he goes around, he's watching where all the different army groups are, just trying to use easy language. And he was able to figure out their movement, and then he was able to radio in a call, and long story again short, they flew in. And Wes left that after a month, came back to the United States, actually down in Murrieta, California. And he got alone with the Lord, and he said, Father, that was one of the most amazing experiences of my life, and I never want to go back to South Sudan again. And all these years later, what Wes tells us constantly is, if God calls us out of South Sudan, I have learned to listen to my Father's voice because he's always right, but he will break my heart. And that's what I want to remind you, is that sometimes in the worst of situations, the very point where you're going, okay, God, that's big, I get it, but I don't want to be there. A lot of times, that's exactly where God is going to bring the greatest fruit and the greatest experiences in our life. Remember that as we go forward. We did start in South Sudan, well, Russia, but really most of our work has been in South Sudan. The merciless, inhumane atrocities that are committed against the innocent women, children, it's hard for Americans to wrap their minds around. During this time, if the North came down and they had one goal, and that was to take the south of Sudan and to force it under Sharia law. And the South, the black African, didn't want that. They wanted to be able to serve Jesus because American missionaries and British missionaries had been going there, and it used to be a colony of Britain years ago. And so they had, a lot of South Sudanese are Christians or they're animist. And so they said no. So the enemy came down and they had one goal, and that was to decimate as many people as possible. The tragedies that we have lived through are really difficult. And I'm going to talk about things that we normally don't talk about in church today. It's really a seatbelt. I am bringing the most PG version that I can of some of the events that are going around the world. And it is going to make us a little uncomfortable even when I go there. But I can promise you this, I'm bringing the softest side of what I have to deal with every single day. The pictures, the videos, the things that I have seen. And thank you for the pastor. One thing that Wes and I covet are your prayers. We don't necessarily want to ask you to put us on your prayer list, but if the Holy Spirit prompts you in the middle of the night, please pray. Because as you hear some of these stories, I can almost assure you there's a really good chance that one of us are in very harmful situation. It doesn't make us brave. It just makes us obedient. But we know where our confidence comes from. And we'll get into that too. You have to be put in the fire to graze your confidence. When we started serving in South Sudan, the Lord opened up the door. God can do bigger things than we could ever imagine. We were written into the constitution of the South Sudanese as a Calvary Chapel ministry. We raise up the chaplains, the pastors, if you will, in a foreign army. They come to our base. We send them through basically a year-long Calvary Chapel Bible College. We bring Calvary Chapel pastors in from all over the country, all over the world. We want to get your pastor there if the Lord will allow that coming up in our next class. But since we started, we have actually trained and deployed 550 pastors to these frontline units. Because it is such a tough time, we've also experienced a tremendous amount of loss as a ministry, and we feel these things. In the first 16 years of ministry, or excuse me, the first 15 years of ministry, we had 16 team members die, mostly from bombs or bullets. It's an incredibly hard thing because these are our brothers. These are people that we know. We spent time with them in Bible college. We built relationships with them. We laid hands on them. They prayed for us constantly. They prayed for you as the American church. These are my brothers. It's an incredibly difficult loss. But in the last 7 years, it's been even more challenging. We've actually, just in South Sudan alone, we've had 54 team members killed just in the last 7 years. And we actually see those numbers really increasing as we're moving deeper and deeper into some of the countries like Burma and Syria and Iran and all these other places that we'll spend some time on. Going from one country or one and a half countries in the early days, the Lord has opened up the door. We're now serving in 37 countries. We're actively involved in 7 war zones. We're in 9 of the 10 most dangerous Islamic nations in the world. And where people are running from, we're running to. And again, this isn't because I am brave. This is because what God can do with a man or a woman who gets to themselves and is so confident as they stand before the Lord that you want your entire life to count for him. And what God can do is so miraculous. I can tell you this, if you would have met me when I was 17 years old, especially you fathers, you would not have liked me. You would have not let me near your daughter if you had a teenage daughter. But what God can do with a man like me is he can take a man like me who is completely lost, and give him such a direction. And today, I went from not thinking properly about women, today that God allows me to protect women and children. It's the most amazing thing. I want to encourage you of that because I don't qualify to stand up here. Maybe one day I'll have a chance to come back and I'll share my testimony. I wish I could, because I can promise you I have 2 left feet. And if God didn't lift me up every day, there's no way that we can do what we can do. And I want you to hold on to that, because when we get into some of these stories, you don't get to look at me like I have some superpowers. I don't. I have a God who has called me, and my breath, my life belongs completely to him because I've tasted those things and I'm driven by it. I lead a division of our ministry called Ghost Operations. How many pastors have you met that has a title of Director of Ghost Operations? What that basically means is that I am responsible for the invisible arm of love, the invisible arm of God, the invisible arm of this church to the most dangerous places. I am responsible for about 1,000 underground pastors and their families in some incredibly, incredibly violent and dangerous places. Again, we'll get into some of those. We don't just send out pastors and chaplains, but we have doctors out there, we have ministry workers, we have some amazing women who, the shirt that the pastor is wearing, that, you know, I'd love to give them that shirt too. Because in some of these Muslim countries, men cannot talk to women about Christ. It's going to create tremendous amount of problems. And so we have brave women who have stayed behind so that they can go and share their faith. They can build a community with the women and the children in some of these countries. It's just the most unique thing. We're mostly known, as I said, about Sudan, but today I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about Ukraine and Latin America. But to build up that, how we ended up there, I'm going to kind of take you on a little bit more of a journey. When we started last year, if you remember about Afghanistan, it's been a little bit of a time, right? So last year when Afghanistan hit the news, and I'm going to spend some time there, we got fully involved in there. We have been able to rescue out of Afghanistan 1,400 Christians, predominantly Christians, as well as being able to be an example to the director of the CIA. The Lord made a connection with us. If anybody have seen the movie 13 Strong, the gentleman who created that movie was actually created on a group of people that went in there, and you know who the actors are, but it was also created on this lady who was part of the CIA, her husband. He was the first CIA agent killed in Afghanistan, a strong believer, just loved Jesus. They had gone over there, he and his wife, she was CIA, and they were out there really building these relationships, and they made incredible relationships with some of the Afghan people. Fast forward that, I'll tell you a little bit about that story, but how God can tie all that together. Again, I'll get back to that. We are going from Africa. We're now taking more and more countries in the Middle East. The Horn of Africa. Excuse me, I swallowed my gum. Asia, shouldn't chew gum in church, right? Asia and even the Horn of Africa. Thank you. Yeah, I have that. I better do that. So today I want to start, though, before I actually get into some of the details, because I don't want you just to remember the details. Some of these details are going to stick with you for a while. And our prayer this morning is that I didn't bring motivation to you guys, to anybody in here, that my stories wouldn't motivate you, because we all know that motivation wanes. In fact, January 1st came, and we, most of us, know better than creating New Year's resolutions, because by the time we get into this weekend, we're already eating chips and all the stuff because we have football games on. So I don't want to motivate you. I am asking that the Holy Spirit takes a work that he's already been doing in you, and everybody, it's going to be different. And I pray that he will release you from that struggle. I pray that he will release you from that thing that is causing hesitation. You know you want more of Christ. You know you want it all to count. You know you want to throw everything at the cross and run this race with endurance. I know Christians want that. You want to bear fruit. And I want to encourage you with these messages that if God can bear fruit through my life, I promise you he can bear fruit through yours. There is a verse, and if you don't mind opening up your Bibles to Luke chapter 19, we're going to start in verse 11. But I have read through these verses 100 times at least. By the grace of God, I was raised in Calvary Chapel. I didn't know better. I was raised like a crazy animal. And so my first experience, I didn't realize how precious it was to be able to sit under Calvary Chapel, Mike McIntosh, because they taught us that the entire Word of God is essential. It's critical. It ties together. And so I've been reading from Genesis to Revelation since I was 19 years old. And I've read this story so many times, but just a little while ago, I got stuck here. I don't know if you've ever done that. And I just got stuck here. I'm going through midlife crisis. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but I'm getting close to 60. And the weirdest thing to me is that it literally feels like yesterday when I used to put my legs up on the coffee table and my precious daughter would just sit there. And I remember looking at her and going, I was 19 years old, 20 years old that time. And I remember looking at her going, oh my goodness, you know, what do I know about being a father? I was raised by animals. And I just jumped in. I started reading Dr. James Dobson's book. I did everything I could to try to be the kind of father that I knew nothing about. Fast forward that, my daughter's now 35 years old, and I have a 10-year-old granddaughter, and it literally feels like yesterday. And I think maybe that is why this stands out to me. Jesus, on his way to his death, he's walking with the disciples, he knows he's going to Jerusalem, nothing's going to change his direction. He absolutely knows what that means. The very people he's about to speak this story to, his disciples, are the very men that are going to betray him and leave him alone. And then they're going to be arrested by his own countrymen and turned over to a foreign army, and he's going to be beaten and he's going to be crucified. And he has the clarity of mind to say this. I don't want to seem silly here, but it's just easier for memory. If God somehow allows me to live to 100 years, if I get a few more years, I still realize that I have less time in front of me than I have behind me. And I want every moment to matter. And this stands out, and it actually is a good reason why that burns inside of me. Let's jump into Luke chapter 19, verse 11, as Jesus talks to the disciples. And as they heard these things, the disciples, he, Jesus, proceeded to tell a parable, because he was near Jerusalem, and because they supposed that the kingdom of God was to appear immediately. He said, therefore, a nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and then return. Calling 10 of his servants, he gave them 10 minas, and he said to them, engage in business. Your translations, if you're using the New King James, probably says, occupy until I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him, saying, "We do not want this man to reign over us." When he returned, having received the kingdom, he ordered those servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know what they had gained by doing business. The first came to him, saying, "Lord, your mina has made 10 minas more." And he said to him, "Well done, good servant, cause and effect. Because you have been faithful in very little, you shall have authority over 10 cities." I just want you to hear that. I never caught that before, and I'm a guy who loves the Greek, and I love to go back, and I never caught that. But it says right here that he was given, because he was faithful in what they called something small. So I had to look that up and really understand that. They were all given what they call a mina, which is about a pound of silver. There's different interpretations, but most scholars believe that it was a pound of silver. It was a lot of money. Poverty rate back then is way different than what we look like today. But what he's saying is, because you are faithful with something like that, I'm going to give you authority over more. I'm going to give you authority over 10 cities. Not just the banking system and work and business, you know, making money, but families and education. I don't know how to pull this out other than I got to trust the Holy Spirit to do it. I used to try to run ahead of myself. I always wanted something that was out there because I thought that it would bring discipline to my life. I thought if I were in this situation that were so difficult, then I would have to cling to God. And what I found by being in ministry is a lot of people who jump ahead of the line and they get into situations they're not prepared for, they throw their tails between their leg and they end up running too soon. And what I have learned is that we've got to go through those fires. I don't want to ever have to go through a fire again. And I've been through fires that have brought tears to my eyes, that have brought pain. I couldn't sleep. I know what fires are. And I never want to have you go through some of the fires I've gone through. But I can tell you today, I thank God for those fires because they made me the man I needed to become, because I wasn't ready at the time for what God wanted to do today. And I'm going to encourage you, if there's a fire, quit trying to run from it. And I know some of you are self-medicating because it is so difficult. God, if you're so big, why is this so hard? I understand that. But what I can tell you, it is through the agony of the soul that God is able to bring out the depths of things, so that when you follow Jesus, it's not with pretense. And I can promise you, my first few years as a Christian, I had a lot of pretense. I learned how to speak in Greek, and I knew how to take the words out of the Bible and look at the Greek and the Hebrew and the Latin, and I got really good at that. And people started coming to me for answers, and I got a little bit built up. And I just want to encourage you, God can take all that knowledge, but he had to put me through the fire just like he has to do with other people. They might gain by doing business. Because you have been faithful, you shall have authority over 10 cities. And the second came saying, "Lord, your mina has made 5 minas." And he said to him, "And you are to be over 5 cities." Then another came saying, "Lord, here is your mina, which I kept laid awake in a handkerchief, for I was afraid of you, because you are a severe man. You take what you did not deposit, and you reap what you did not sow." And he said to him, "I will condemn you with your own words, you wicked servant. You knew that I was a severe man because you said it, taking what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank, and at my coming I might have collected it with interest?" And he said to those who stood by, "Take the mina from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas." And he said to him, "Lord," and they said to him, "Lord, he has 10 minas. And I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away." It just sticks in me because I just told you about, I realize I have less time before me, but Jesus on his own way to his own death had the clarity of mind to remind the disciples, and I believe collectively for us today, that we are called clearly until our last breath to occupy, to do kingdom work. To be driven by love to reach those people that we're just too tired to go reach. We'll spend a few more minutes there. As I mentioned to you, I'm 57 years old. Actually, I told you I wasn't going to tell you that, and I just did, but I'm close to 60, so I'm 57. There you go. And this is going to be a little dramatic, but it's going to make sense. And I realize that if I'm given, let's make it easy, 100 years. If I'm given 100 years to live, what I do in that little time right there somehow means something into eternity. And eternity keeps going outside those windows and around the earth, and it keeps going. Eternity has no end. And my opportunity to glorify Jesus is literally that little. It might feel long, but it's going to go by that quickly. I am not standing up here before you interpreting this as my salvation is based on what I do for God. It's not. I was dead in my trespasses and sin. I didn't even know how dead I was. I know that. I know that. I know my struggles that I've had to wrestle with the Lord. I know my incapacity to earn God's favor. I know how I can trip people up and trip myself up apart from God. But I want to encourage you is what God can do in those years, it really matters. And it's because I've been given a gift and that love that a God from heaven would come and try to transform me, what it has done to me is it drives me to want to serve Jesus, not because I'm trying to earn his favor. It's because I want the world to know the pain in this world is only going to come to an end, and it's not in our life, but it's only going to come to end when people find Jesus. When they come to that place that they meet the Jesus that I did, that Mike McIntosh and Ray Bentley introduced to me, that so transformed my life over time that it literally made what I do, the way I step, the way I walk, the way I live, it became something so important because I did not want to be a man who spoke about Christ and was a horrible example about Christ. I don't want that because I want to honor God with what he's given. And if I'm given that short of time, I'm telling you, it's driving me to glorify my King. I'm in love with him. But more importantly, just like my brother in here that the pastor prayed for him and his daughter is going through a struggle, what I want so desperately is that sweet angel to come to her right mind, that she would come out of that bondage, that the lies in her head, that she'd be set free. Because that's what is the only hope that can change people around. We were called as Christians to collectively bear fruit, and this church is bearing fruit. I want to say this. I wrote it in my notes. The Lord gave me this message, and after hanging out with your pastor this morning and some of you, I wanted to change my message. I wanted to make it easier because I'm going, wait, everybody around here is loving and kind, and there's third generations even coming. There's parents, children are now grown up, and they have their, what a great place. But what the Lord said to me, is it's okay to remind people of exactly the most important things of life. And some of you don't need to be reminded the way I do, so I pray this is an encouragement to you. But all of us have been called to collectively bear fruit. All of us have called to be obedient with these things that we have been entrusted with. We're going to watch a video in a couple minutes. I had a couple other videos I wanted to bring, but somehow I brought Wes's flash stick, so we're going to actually watch a video. You may have seen this. It's been around for a couple years, but it's an incredibly important video by a friend of mine. His name is Danny. In my world, I have to change names and locations to protect the innocent because we have some pretty bad people that are interested in what we're doing. When Afghanistan, if you kept up on that, can you believe that Afghanistan was about a year ago? We don't even hear about it anymore. But I can tell you it's still going on. When Afghanistan started, it was an all hands on deck. I remember when things started going. What most people in Calvary didn't realize that as a ministry, we've had 22 people, underground workers, pastors, doctors in Syria for years. With their families, we had about 220. So when those first few days of Afghanistan started to happen, we actually started getting calls before you guys all of us were seeing what was on the news. And we knew that it was going to be bad. We were trying to get our team out and trying to get them up to the front line and trying to get them out of that country. If you remember in the early days of Afghanistan, where the Afghans were clinging on to the transport planes and they were falling and to their death, it was a really hard situation. When we saw that unfolding on news, when Ukraine started to happen, and I'm going to get there, everybody left Afghanistan. And the Taliban have taken off their gloves. They've had lists for years called blacklists, and they have been targeting both Christians as well as Muslims who helped the United States. And we were there for 20 years. It fell in 10 days, and it became a worst-case scenario for almost everybody in that country. Please continue to pray. What God gave us wisdom in the very beginning, and I don't know how we ended up with this, we knew we couldn't just take thousands of Christians across the border into Iran or Tajikistan or to Pakistan and the surrounding countries, because if they went there, eventually they're going to get rounded up and they're going to be given back to the Taliban. And so by the grace of God in the early stages, God gave us a connection with a guy who had helped the Americans for years, and they had just made a new printing press for their passports. And he stole it, and we were able to work with him to be able to get passports and visas, true ones, to allow our people to get to other countries. And so God is doing things that is just amazing. Now we have actually some of our leaders, some of our doctor leaders are in an IDP camp here in the United States, and maybe we'll take a team from here one day. But when Afghanistan was happening, I was still dealing with Burma. I was still dealing with Syria. Syria's at a war for a long time. You're going to watch a video on Danny, and you're going to be able to get some more information. But the world is really crazy right now. And what I really want to encourage us today is not to carry this weight. I know when I'm carrying this weight, because I'll be on an airplane and all of a sudden the tears are just running down my face and I can't stop it. That's not what I want. I think that compassion is really good. But what I want us to do is to understand that the world is shaking. And I want to be really careful with these next. Please understand my heart. These last couple years have been very difficult on the church. I don't know if you guys have kept up on what happened, but there was this thing called the COVID or something like that. And it shut down churches, it shut down America. We haven't dealt with that. So we're learning as we're going. But I found out in the very beginning of that, I started seeing these wavelengths of people who were fighting against the wrong thing. I wear a mask. I've had to wear a mask for years because of this COVID thing, and I'm on planes all the time. I hate masks. But I just remember that it wasn't about the mask. I wanted to go to my enemy, and I wanted to be able to introduce them to Jesus. Mask or no mask, they need Jesus. And it was just a different perspective. I'm not downplaying our hatred for these things, but I am reminding us, I would be willing to wear a mask every single hour of every single day if I could lead people to Jesus. I'm not going to wear a mask if I'm not going to lead people to Jesus, but I have a different perspective. I am a kingdom-minded individual. I am so thankful I'm an American because I have the freedoms to be able to stand up here this morning and be as bold as I am. I have the freedom to come in and out of this country without being interrogated like it happens with most of our Christians in other countries. But what I am more mindful of, and I thank God that Mike McIntosh was in my life, I'm proud to be an American, proud in the right way. But I realize that as a man of God, my first calling comes from my Father. I am called an ambassador of heaven. You're an ambassador of heaven. Every single person in here, from a young man to his parents to grandparents, you are an ambassador of heaven. Let me make that a little bit more real. If I'm in the United States and Biden asked me to become an ambassador to Russia, that is a very big post. I'm representing America. I'm over there working with the Americans that are over in Russia. I'm working with the Russians. I have a lot of stuff going on as an ambassador of heaven. I have to tell you, it supersedes that. I am a man of love because I'm an ambassador of heaven. And for God so loved the world that he gave. Now, as an ambassador, I have to speak the truth. And so I speak the truth, but I speak the truth in love. I want to build bridges. As we were talking to that man this morning about his daughter, the Lord had woke me up early this morning. I just remember he was telling me that there's suffering in here. And a lot of times as you look out, you don't know who's suffering unless you can spend time with them. But I can promise you this, that if we can get out of our own heads, if we can just turn off the news for a while, if we can spend more time worshiping the Lord, if we can have the sensitivity of that, I can tell you that there is so much ministry to be done in this church, we don't even have to look at the outside. And then when you go outside this church, I can promise you, apart from Christ, whether you're in the nicest house in El Centro or you're living on the streets today, what I can tell you is both of their worlds are going to catch on fire at some point. And I pray that the Lord will allow us to be witness to them in this time. That's my passion. I want to watch a little video, and then I'm going to come up here and talk a little bit, close, and talk a little bit about what's going on in Ukraine. And, well, I didn't mean Ukraine. In Latin America, actually in Ukraine too. So let's do that. But I want you to watch a video. This is Danny. Danny loves you guys. I have spent a lot of time with Danny in some very secure locations because we can't let Danny's real identity be known because he's a little bit well known in a particular country called Syria. But I want you to hear your brother, and he represents so many of the men and women who God has connected us with that are willing to give up everything so that their countrymen would know Jesus.
When the war started, many problems happened, and it's so difficult to continue the ministry. And we know someday the problems is come inside our homes, not just in our city or in our area. At that time, I speak to the leaders, and we met together, and I said, as in Acts book, the believers, when they have the persecuted, most of them, they go out of Jerusalem. If you want now to go out of your area or out of Syria to save your families, this is good if God gave you this to do. But we must to know, maybe one day the problems come to our families and to our life, and maybe we will lost our life one day. You know, when I left the room and after time I turned back to see the decision of the leaders, I found 25 people. They stand there and they said, we will not leave. We will continue to serve God here in this area, and we will continue the ministry. If we are die, we will go to Jesus. And if we leave here, we will be with Jesus. And you know, but they asked me something to do. They said, if one of our team die, you know, we are non-Christian background, and no one will take care about our body if we killed or something happened to us. What we can do if this happened? For that, we buy this land and we built a graveyard. This graveyard for if anyone killed from our team, we can put him there. This is the first building of our ministry. I think it's first happened in Raqqa city in Syria. They give the chance for the Christian. They said to him, if you leave your Christianity now, you can be hold your life, or if not, we will kill you. This decision is, you know, it must to take directly. And most of the Christians said, no, we are ready to die for Jesus. And for that, you can see many pictures about the Christian. They put them in the cross, and when they put them, many times they put in the area, all the people can see them, to learn the people, if you will be Christian, this is your what will happen to you. Most of the people, I thank God for this heroes in the faith. They die for Jesus and they put them in the cross. You remember when I told you about the stories about the man who with his son, and they bring them and they ask them to leave them faith in Jesus Christ, but the father said no and the son said no. And they asked the father, if you don't come to Islam now, we will kill your son in front of your eyes. And after that, they cut the head of the son and they start to play football in his head in front of his father's eyes. This is something incredible. You cannot understand what's happened. But through all this bad news, you can see the hope is growing between this difficult and bad people. You know, sometimes many people ask me why you continue in the ministry in Syria, especially in this time in the war. The important things for our life to be in God willing. This is our call from God to do the ministry in Syria. When we are inside the God willing, that means we are in the safe place. But if we are go out of God willing and go out of Syria, that means we are in the dangerous place. Maybe I can go like to Lebanon, to Jordan, to US, to anywhere and continue my life there. But that means I am go out of God willing. That means I am in dangerous. The important things in our life, not to be alive, but to be with Jesus willing. But if I am inside the dangerous, but in God willing, that means I am in the safe place. This is my belief, and I trust in Jesus. He will keep my life, and when He wants me to go to Him, I am ready to do this.
I just wanted to bring Danny to you guys. He's one of the neatest brothers I have ever met. Even in the midst of this, of him going in and out, because he's our one person that can get our food in and out, in the midst of that, his wife gave up on Christianity. She said, this is just too hard. And this man with tears running down his face, why this motivates me, is with tears running down his face, and I'm like, Danny, are you okay? He's like, no, I'm not okay, Edward. But I know Jesus, and I've got to trust that he's going to hold my heart. And I wish I could tell you that a couple years after that happened that his heart was better, but he still struggles with it. But every day he gets up and he goes. You know, human suffering is not something I want to shock anybody with today at all. And I don't want us to feel guilty that we're not born in Syria or anything like that. But I want to bring this morning as a reminder is the focus on Jesus is the most important thing this world needs from us. Because the world is suffering more than us. And I'm not downplaying that you guys are suffering. We're all suffering. But in comparison, it is a little bit different. I was with a pastor friend of mine who's going to go into the next country. I'm about to speak to you. And we were talking about Luke chapter 19, and he went into a little bit, and I had to take his notes down. Let me just kind of write these down or explain these to you. He read verse 15 in Luke 19 that we read, and I'll read it to you again. He ordered those servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him that he might know what they had gained by doing business. The first came before him, saying, Lord, your mina has made 10 minas more. And he said to him, well done, comma, good servant, because... And I wanted to stick there. I've heard that well done. I like that. It's what I say a lot. I pray that one day we all stand in the throne room of heaven and we hear the voice of God over all of us. Well done, my good and faithful servants. And that's what I think about in that verse. And he went back to the core of that verse. He said, Edward, what's the first thing that the Lord says was said to that man? And I said, well done. And I want to compliment this church. As I walk through this church, as I've seen the 46 years that you guys have been here, as I'm seeing three generations, I can actually tell you that well done around here. And that's what I want the world to understand is as Christians, we don't get to be casual. We don't get to take shortcuts. We don't get to complain and act like everybody we see. As Christians, we are lights to Christ first, even if no other person ever takes up that mantle and realize that they are lights and salt first. But I'm standing in the congregation after walking around your church, and I'm telling you, you are that church that is well done, good servants. And I'm going to encourage you, finish well. Pass on the baton that has happened in this church to the next generation, because that's what we get. I love talking to you adults because we're peers. We can relate with so many of the same things, but you want to know where I'm spending most of my time? With young men like him, when I was watching him raise, he's a young man over there. He doesn't know I'm pointing at him, which is a good thing, because I can walk over here, and when he looks, he won't know. But when that young man right over there, when I was watching him, he was worshiping the Lord. I wish you guys could have seen it. I try to be respectful in the front arm, because I don't want to bring attention to myself, so I'll worship like this, very low-keyed, and I looked at that young man. I'm going, this guy's a young man. He's doing this. You guys are producing fruit. That man, should the Lord tarry? Because I do believe the Lord is coming back, but we are supposed to tarry. We're supposed to do work. We're supposed to go until he calls us home. And so my focus is on a man like that, because at some point I'm going to run out if the Lord keeps me. I can't keep going into tough places. I spend a lot of time in the gym. I am really faithful on my diet. I'm taking blood 4 times a year so I can see what's going on inside, but I know I'm only going to be able to hold that a little bit. And I'll move on from there. Afghanistan is a pretty tough situation, but Ukraine is even worse. And I know that the politics of the Ukrainian government and the Russian government, I've spent a lot of time there. I have a heart for that part of the world. I really do. What I can tell you is that I've heard that even in America, politics are corrupt. I don't know if you guys have heard that. It is never about the government. It is always about the people. We are rescuing people in Afghanistan. We're dropping in teams. We have a lot of friends that are former special forces. We're helping people out. We're working with our Calvary chapels there. The Lord also connected us with the military, with their chaplains. And these men love Jesus. And now we're taking them on, and we're supporting them and raising them up. That's going to be a very tough situation for a long time. And again, it's not about the politics. Christians, I know politics matter, but lives matter most. And that's what we're trying to focus on. In addition to what's going on there, when that first started taking off, we woke up one day and we knew we had to deal with some things. We were already involved in Afghanistan, and Ukraine took off. But what most people don't realize is that we had other things going on, like Latin America. We got a call from Joe Foch, and there was a young man that he knew, fourth-degree black belt in Krav Maga, and he's down in South America. Can't tell you where. He's Central or South America. And we got a call that he was approached. He's a missionary. He was approached by a man and wanting to sell his two daughters to him. He thought it was a joke. And then he found out that it wasn't. He was down there to teach soccer to kids. That was his way to evangelize in the community. And so he did some investigation and found out that that's something that happens in this poor country, is that parents will sell their children for a couple hundred dollars because that couple hundred dollars can feed their family for 6 months, 3 months. We even know of parents that we have had to deal with that are selling their children for like $100 a month, knowing that they're being prostituted out. When he found out about that, he had been working with the police, the chief of police, and he's training their people. There's some very corrupt police within this police force. They're part of the cartel. But he's been building amazing relationships because he doesn't know who's good and who's not, but he's loving on them with the love of Jesus and teaching them skills. So he has great favor. So when he called the chief of police and explained what was happening, he went in and they sent him up with a group of some SWAT teams that actually go into these homes. And what he ran into this day changed our world, and why Joe Foch actually ended up calling us and saying, do more. He went into a room. They took him on a raid, and he went into a small room. This is going to be tough, just warning you. He took him into a small room, and on the table were these little children. And unfortunately, they were deceased, but their bodies were still warm. They had been sold. Their organs had been cut out, because there are people that are now going to this country, superstitious people that are very wealthy and believe that if I can eat the heart, a liver of a child, then it will extend my life and give me more power. And when we heard about that, we said enough is enough. And we jumped into it, and that is just taking full time. We have now rescued. We'll have 66 kids. We have about 30 kids that we've already rescued. We have a couple infants that the cartel got ladies pregnant in the idea of when they delivered to take that child, because it's even worth more money because it's a brand new child. They're getting that perverted on it. So we have a couple girls in hiding in this country. We're connected with our Calvaries. They're going to be working with us. But I would ask that you'd be praying, because the trauma that we're dealing with is really bad. So let me fast forward. We're involved. We buy this house. It's really secure. It's on a busy road. The cartel can't easily find it, even though we know there's a lot of risk there. We sent one of our board members down there who is retired from the FBI. He ran all of California. He ran the Horn of Africa. This guy's a very advanced tactician, but he's also a Calvary Chapel pastor. And so we're looking at this from every single perspective that we can. When we were, just happened 2 weeks ago, and I'm giving you guys an update. 2 weeks ago, my team member down there got a call from a senator. And the senator says, I understand that you have a home now for children, girls under the age of 12. And I'm just so excited about that. I want to help you. I can make sure you have all the money, because I heard you're struggling with money. I can make sure you have all the money you need, and I can make sure you have all the protection you need. And the only thing I need from you is two little girls a year. Don't get me wrong. These girls are not for me. They're for a friend of mine that has really weird taste in a young girl. There's a newsletter coming out that you can read this. It's a very tough situation. At first, when you hear this stuff, it's like, okay, I'm being conned. Joe, can you tell me about this guy more? Luke, you spent a week with him. It's just so big and outlandish. And unfortunately, it's all true. And when he said, absolutely not, to the man on the phone, he's a tough guy. He said, absolutely not. A couple days later, we had a raid at our front place from the Child Protective Services, and they took half of our children. We sent four of our girls with them. They were then trying to take half of our kids and take them to another part of this country, which would have been hours away. Basically, they would have disappeared, the kids, and we stayed there. They told us that we needed to raise more money, And so Wes just pulled out some money. We don't know where it came from, but we pulled out some money and get it in the bank down there, and they brought all of our children back. Two of our girls tried to commit suicide, 7 years old, because when they were in Child Protective Services, they were violated again. This is the corruption that we're dealing with on a planet, on our planet. And I want to remind the body of Christ is these are the things that are happening, the trauma that happens with a child like that. We have to have clinical psychiatrists. We have to have medical doctors. We have to have all these people on staff down there just to deal with this complexity of it. These children, unfortunately, too, are not adoptable because in that country, when you're sexually exploited as a child, they realize those children have so many issues that they call them unadoptable. And so we're asking you to be praying so that we can break through everything that we can. I've spent way too much time. I realize that I've went over, and I want the pastor to come up here, so I'm going to jump to the end of my notes. I know this is an everyday church, and I know it's just weird stuff to hear about. And I don't think we need to hear about this all the time because we're supposed to be as innocent as doves, right? And I want us to be that way. But the Bible tells us that we, for those in prison, they're suffering for their faith in Christ, that we're supposed to sympathize, empathize with them as if it were us suffering. And what I want to remind us when the world is just becoming so noisy, I pray that God will take one of those stories, two of those stories, and just help put our thoughts in order. Because the world is making a lot of noise, and I want to tell you about a little vision I had, and I don't get these, okay? But I was on a plane. And I had my eyes closed. I was coming back from overseas. I was incredibly wiped out. I was tired. It's exhausting what we do. You get tired of death and pain and disease. You do get tired of it. And I had my eyes closed, and I saw this smoky fire like a grass fire. Southern California, we get a lot of fires. All that smoke coming, and it was coming in my eyes, and I remember it was burning really bad, and I was trying to move. My eyes are closed on this flight. And I remember it felt like it was really painful. And then I saw these really fast-moving little things. And I just remember going, well, that's weird. This is just really trippy. And I felt like the Lord said to my heart, the enemy comes to us with a lot of smoke and mirrors, makes a lot of noise to distract us. But what he's really trying to do in that smoke and mirrors is he's trying to flank us. He wants to defeat us and he wants to make us powerless. And I want to encourage you, you're carrying the power of the university of the kingdom of heaven. As believers, I'm assuming everybody in here knows Jesus. I'll leave that up to the pastor. I don't have that kind of discernment gift. But I just want to let you know that if God can transform these lives and my life, he can transform you, transform yours, and he can transform others. I went over my time. I'm so sorry, and I didn't even get to finish everything, but I don't want to just leave you there. I'm going to address something. I didn't get to talk to the pastor. We're going too fast, and so I'll ask him for forgiveness if I step out of bounds here. In Calvary Chapel, we don't talk about money very often, and I'm going to do this right. I'm going to do my very best to do this right. I don't know how to be a Calvary Chapel pastor. I didn't go to seminary. I was ordained a pastor, still trying to figure that out. So I might get disqualified for right now. But I remember when I was 19 years old, and some of you from Horizon are going to really laugh at this. The first 2 years of being at Horizon, I didn't even get close to Mike McIntosh. I was so in awe of this man. I thought that he was so spiritual that he had reached this pinnacle of perfection. And I was afraid that if I got near him, he was going to be able to understand my past, and I was too embarrassed. And I realized over time that Mike is just like your pastor and just like me. He's just another man. But as a business guy, I knew I had to go to work. I had a family. But when it came to church, a lot of times I wasn't as I should have been. And I realized that. I knew I needed to take care of mortgage and do all that stuff. And I'm going to tell you an embarrassing story. It happened at Horizon. I was faithful to give, but it wasn't really there. It was more like, gosh, I hate when this conversation comes up. And that's transformed in my life. I can't take you through that journey. But I remember this person came with hungry in this orphanage, and they were freezing, and they needed a heater immediately. And I just brokenhearted, and I went, okay, and I wrote the money, and I did it, and I felt really good. And my wife and I knuckle punched, and we were really happy. And a couple years later, I realized what I did. And this is not, your pastor has not asked me to say this. But a lot of times we take what God needs to do here, and you get moved emotionally, and then you end up supporting over here. And I don't want to do that, because you know why? God called me to Afghanistan. But he's called you here. Because for God so loved the world that he gave. And he gave El Centro you. I'm called to these other countries. Maybe some of you will join me there. But I wasn't called to El Centro except for to be here today. But God has people like you, his children in El Centro, in Afghanistan, in Russia. God has his children all over this planet. And what I want to do is to remind you first and foremost that this is your first ministry. Be faithful here. And when you're faithful here, you have no idea what God can do later on. And I know some of you are going to want to be involved, and the pastor was generous enough. I put out a table over there, and I'm going to say this, and the pastor doesn't know that. I don't want your help. I drove out here. Somebody lent me their car. I have a really nice Tesla. I've never, you know, those are fun. So I didn't have to spend all the gas. So anybody want to ride? But I don't want your help. Because when Wes and I are stateside and we have brothers and a sister like your pastor, we want to stand in the pulpit and be able to bring messages that God is still alive and on his throne and he is still moving and work is to be done. In fact, I can tell you this, we need workers. The Bible verse says that pray for the harvest. There's a lot to do, but not enough workers. I can tell you it's absolutely true. And I'm not asking you to come over to Syria. It takes a special calling. If you want to get involved in us and you want to do that, please be faithful to your tithing here, because there is no money tree out back. I know that sounds terrible and we don't talk that way, but it's true. And I'm just telling you as a brother, because I sat right there for most of my life. And the other thing, if you do want to get involved in this, I'm going to tell you practically how to do it. I would support the children. 100% of everything that we bring in, my salary is taken care of by a businessman. Wes is taken by a care of a businessman. And everything we're doing, we want to bear fruit. 100% of what you would give will go to take care of those children. It'll go to take care of the chaplains, because we've actually taken them. We're paying their salaries now in Ukraine. That's what we're choosing to do so that we can really speak in their lives. If you're interested in doing that, I have some dossiers back there. Just do what you can do. If you want to, and if you want to give a small gift after you've been faithful here, fine. What would help, and this sounds so corny, but if you're going to give a gift, if you can do monthly and automatically to support a child, because it just helps us. We don't have to keep worrying about that. If they're taken care of, they're taken care of, they're taken care of. I have some dossiers of some of those beautiful children. I only have 13 from our home down in South America, because we're still working on all of those right now. I have some of them. And then I have our underground chaplains and that you can meet back there. If you are interested, we can talk later. But what I want to end with right now, as I invite the pastor up, I consider this a privilege. Standing in a pulpit shakes me, because I know every word that I speak, and I'm looking around, I can see where some of you engaged. I see some of you, my expression, I'm a pretty passionate guy, and I'm making you crack up. There's a friend of mine over there that I keep seeing laughing at me, but it's okay. I'm passionate. But I would rather be a fool in front of the entire world, a sincere fool, so that they can know the Jesus I have, because I can tell you, I'm a man from a broken heart, and I have been restored. And I want the world to know what I have, because the freedom I have, I can promise you, I have never felt more free in my entire life than when I'm being obedient to my Father. And I can stand in the congregation and encourage you. And this man is a faithful man, 46 years. Thank you, my brother, for sharing your pulpit. Thank you.